Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Beaming to you from Sydney, Australia. And of course, you can find us on the web at truthnews.com.au. And you can also find us through the Logos Radio Network, either on your FM dial while you're driving. And of course, if you're already listening to us, that's what you've already done. But if you're listening to the podcast and you're thinking, well, I'd like to actually listen to the show, well, I can't even tell you how to do that. I don't know. I know it goes out on a number of FM frequencies in Austin, Texas, and in Oklahoma City and a number of other cities in the US. Go to Logos Radio Network and have a look, and I'm sure you'll be able to find out. And it's really great, I have to say, to have those listeners from the US. I've been getting some really good emails from people who are listening from the US, and I really appreciate it. Whenever you contact me, I really do appreciate it. It's not always possible for me to reply, but I do read everything. Now, at the end of the last hour there, I ran through some key questions, which were my questions, which trouble me and really, which I really want to focus on in this discussion about gun legality, gun control measures, and whether they should be restricted, how they should be regulated. And I did remark there about the problem about personalities, and I noticed we started to get into the question about Alex Jones and whether we like him and whether we don't like him, and it's a totally valid discussion. Like I don't want to say you shouldn't talk about that, but what I find, as I've just seen, is that so much of the time everything just gets diverted into that discussion, and it just seems to become a trap that stops you actually thinking. And so I mean, of course, you're free to say whatever you like. Josh and John, you know, if you want to chime in as you wish, please go ahead. But can we just talk about the possibility of civil war in America? I mean, what do you think, John?
Well, it's happened before. It can happen again. There's no doubt about the possibility of it. Whether it's likely, who knows? But what we do know is that America's in $16 trillion debt. We've got a massive population that is becoming impoverished, being forced into poverty. There's massive social inequality and growing day by day. So whether or not America is likely to go into some sort of civil war or some sort of revolution of sorts, or possibly a secession from the United States of certain states, say, for instance, Texas, succeeding from the Union because of reasons of gun control, possibly, say, for instance. I think there's many, many reasons it could happen in America, and because it's happened there previously on a different basis, obviously, we're talking about a different style of civil war this time. It wouldn't be a war that there'd be a front line. And with two, you know, clearly opposing sides, I don't imagine that sort of thing. What I imagine is, some sort of insurrection by the population due to a tyrannical police state, you know, and that's obviously why they want to take the guns. That's why they've tried to spin this Sandy Hook massacre into an issue about assault rifles, and we can talk about why assault rifles are so important later. But I think it is possible, and I think it's a something that if I was in America, I don't own a weapon, even though I was quite a good shot in the army. I actually got a trophy once for shooting. I don't own a weapon because I know that my family and myself are at greater risk while it's in the house. But if I lived in America, I'd have a very good arsenal.
Right. Interesting. Josh, a quick take from you. What do you think about the possibility of civil war in America?
Oh, look, no offense to a lot of my American friends, but the vast majority are just too fat and lazy and TV obsessed. And I just don't think, I think what would happen is you'd get a few really pissed off people. They'd make a big example of them. Even if that's 1,000 people or 10,000 people, it's not really enough. And the hardware that an individual has is nothing compared to the hardware that the state has. And there's really no chance. There's really no chance. So I don't think a revolution. I mean, anyway, even if there was a revolution, really, what do you get is just more of the same. You just get a lot of bloodshed in between. And so I really think it's a case about evolution, not revolution. And having this sort of notion that having a semi-automatic in the house will stop the government from being tyrannical is it's too late.
But still, is it likely? So you actually don't think there's enough people with enough will and sort of, I guess, dedication, training, determination to actually engage in a warfare with a very, very heavily armed, extremely powerful, you know, superpower that turns on its own people. I tend to think you're
laser
right.
Laser-guided everything and drones and I mean, robot warriors and...
But you know. if I think you're right on one level. However, what tends to happen in civil wars is that it's an internal collapse, right? So what actually happens is people who are within the system turn against the system, and there's plenty of opportunity for that occurring. This would happen within the military as well. This could happen with whole divisions of the armed forces. Anything is possible. And look what's happening in Syria. I mean, you've got to understand that once you get into a state of civil war, that huge arsenal that you're talking about isn't necessarily just in the hands of the enemy. The enemy can defect, and so personally, I think it can happen. I'm not saying I want it to happen. I don't think it's the solution either. You know, and I'm agreeing with you on that.
You know, it's the old thing. If you rob Peter to pay Paul, you could pretty much guarantee that Paul's going to help you. And the American government employs so many people that all the teachers and the, I mean, it's a crazy amount of people that are employed by the American government. It's like a 1 in 10 or something crazy. I don't know, but it's a huge number. And
yeah, we're talking about a reality that maybe you can't see, Josh. And I agree with a lot of your points. You know, fat, dumb, and happy. You know, people are being fed a lot of media that's very cheap. They've got a lot of cheap, high calorie food to keep them happy, even though it's destroying their health. You've got those sorts of situations going on. You've got people pretty well, you know, completely lost as regards to what the truth is about a whole lot of events in history. You know, the propaganda machine is very, very strong. Yeah, that could be the case, but we're not talking about a reality. We're talking about a reality where they fall over the fiscal cliff, okay? We have a few states that go – well, there's numerous states in America now that are bankrupt, where schools are closing, you know, where there's not that structure. And that's what Harewood's talking about. The structure breaks down internally, and then people start picking sides for economic gain. That's what happens in these sorts of civil wars, where there's a state, you know, that owes money to another state and says, oh, hey, we're not playing that. And the government comes out and says, hey, we're going to bring out the National Guard, the state National Guard, because we can't afford to play and we don't want our people to starve, and, you know, it's on.
Yeah.
And that's how it starts. And this is where semi-automatic weapons are very, very important in these sorts of guerrilla type wars, where it's people, you know, fighting to maintain their own property, fighting within resistance groups, within elements against the federal government, the state governments, really not, some of them siding with the rebels, some not, some with the federal. You know, this is the sort of situation we're talking about. It's not something that we can see now.
We've
seen it before in history, but you're right. They've got these very high tech weapons, but at the end of the day, you know, someone that knows how to use a semi-automatic weapon can lay down suppressing fire for attacks. So like, you can defend your property much better with that sort of weapon than you can with a standard rifle. Now, the issue around if we get into the technicalities of how assault rifles are used and why they're so important in battle is because they can be fired from the hip while running, and they can be fired at targets at short range while running, and they can provide suppressing fire. And other people with semi-automatic and automatic weapons can provide covering fire while those people are moving. And, you know, it means that you can create a force that can actually, in close quarters, can actually put up a good fight with any army. It doesn't matter. We see that in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Where, you know, where when they're in the town and other people have automatic weapons or semi-automatic pistol grip weapons, assault-type rifles, you know, they can bring devastating fire to bear on you know, the you know, tyrannical forces or the invading forces, and they can cause them a lot of casualties, and they can make their improvised bombs. They can find ways around certain surveillance techniques that the enemy use. They can hide within the civilian populations. You know, there's all these possibilities, but when you take away all the guns, and you know, and semi-automatic weapons especially, pistol grip type weapons that can be fired instinctively from the hip, and that can be fired at large rates of fire with large capacity magazines. You take away the ability for these people to organize into militias and into resistance forces. That really, with the military backing, say, for instance, in certain states, the National Guard and other groups start to join up, having a population with these sorts of arms provides a more fair playing or battlefield for the forces than what would happen if you don't have those people armed. And I think it also provides a real you know, preventative measure from the government trying to do anything too much. And I think that's why they're really chasing down these semi-automatic weapons. You'll see it time and time again, yeah, by the propaganda. That's what they're after. They're after the military weapons that can lay down, you know, large amounts of fire, and they can be used, you know, instinctively from the hip. That's what the pistol grip's all about. You can't fire a normal rifle that you hold overhand instinctively. But when you put your hand, your finger can point at something at a long distance very accurately. I don't know if you understand that, but when you grab a pistol grip weapon, you instinctively, with a bit of training, can point that weapon from your hip without aiming,
right,
and hit things very effectively.
Yeah.
And this is the big difference, and this is what people that haven't been in the military don't understand, why they're so important if you want to defend yourself from, you know, from military forces. It's you can't defend yourself without them, basically.
Right, really important points there, John. And you know, in the debate about whether these types of weapons should be legal, I mean, there's two themes in it that I've noticed. One is where gun advocates say, look, we want to have these guns. We want to use them for hunting. We want to use them because we just like them. You know, it's our right. And that's one argument. But of course, that's not the main.
They're not particularly useful for hunting. They're not designed for hunting.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not really a very strong argument. And of course, then
it's a silly argument. Then
the liberal left wing comes, say, you don't need that. Of course, well, they don't really need it. But then Alex Jones comes along and says, Alex Jones says, no, we want it to defend ourselves against a tyrannical government. It's war. And I think that's more honest. And I understand it. Yeah.
I do too. Now, people can say, well, the government's got artillery, they've got this, they've got that. Well, they do, but they can't bring the artillery to bear on a whole town. You know, they can't. Differentiating who's enemy and who's foe is the difficult thing. But having those weapons, you know, with individuals and for being a right for everyone to have them, so that when something starts off, people that have these, obviously certain areas of governments might want to start rounding these weapons up.
Yeah.
And that's where people will start making that individual decision whether they need that weapon to defend themselves. And you know, I think the best example of this is to look at the Middle East. You know, we see in the Middle East that passionate people with these sorts of firearms can do a lot of damage. They can bring down the government. You know, sure, they need rocket launchers and other things that get introduced because you know with these sort of weapons you can set up an ambush, and once you can ambush, you know, a military convoy, then you can take the weapons that you require to take on that military. This is what resistance forces do. They build up their arsenal through attacking people on the ground of their choosing. You know, they pick an area where they know because they're local.
Yeah.
Oh, they're going to come up here. We've been watching them over the last few weeks. They're going to bring their convoy up here. They're going to be carrying this, and that, and machine guns and maybe an artillery piece or blah, blah, blah. And we're going to set up an ambush because we're the locals and we know the territory. We know that mountain pass. And they take them out and they gather those weapons for their cause. So, you know, it's not a world that we want to be in. Like, this is a terrible world, and it's going to lead to massive 20, 30, 40 million people dead in America if it happened. It, you know, you don't want that to happen, and the government don't want to happen. But once they take all those weapons,
Guys, we're just going to break. We're just going to break. Josh, you can chime in on that when we come back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Great to be with you today. We'll be right back after a few short messages. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. They say everything can be replaced. Every distance is not near. So I remember every man who put me here. Oh, Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. We are discussing warfare, civil war, guns, your rights, and what is required to be able to shake off an invader or to liberate a people who are subjected to tyranny. Now, Josh, I think you were trying to make a point there at the end of the last segment.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it's a complete nightmare if everyone just starts fighting this stuff. I mean, the state of God, these drone aircraft now that will specifically, you know, can look down to, I don't know, I thought it's like a pixel per meter, if not even a higher resolution than that. And this is probably, I think, pixel per centimeter now.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have no chance. Even if you start picking off convoys and building up an arsenal, all you can do is this is typical Afghanistan style, where you just wear them down. You wear the opposition down, where the opposition's just like, oh, after 10 years, oh, man, this is getting a bit boring now. Because they've just got, they could just keep printing money. They just keep slapping more and more soldiers into it. And I really don't see that there's a solution in fighting and war. I mean, you know, call me an old hippie, but it's more, I mean, if that happened in my neighborhood, I'm sorry, I'd pack all my crap. What are worldly possessions really? What the heck is it?
One of my questions for this discussion. I mean, you've jumped to one of the questions. I don't really mind which order we talk about this in. I actually said, you know, is there a viable alternative to the use of force? And I think it's a very important question, because in my study of history, every time we see a violent revolution, we just end up with more tyranny. It just happens again and again and again. The American Revolution is maybe a little different, although, as we now see, at America.
And the French Revolution.
Of course, the French Revolution.
Colonial powers and royalty being kicked off has happened successfully plenty of times in history, but it's a different scenario, I agree. But really, aren't these corporate, you know, the Rockefellers of the world, I suppose, better to name them that way. Aren't they really just the same as the aristocracy, you know, really?
You could certainly argue that. I was just making the point there that the one thing about the American Revolution is that it gave us the U.S. Constitution, which is seen as a great sort of jewel, a great achievement of the human mind, to have penned a document with all its amendments, of course, that enshrines human freedoms. But then again,
it's being used as toilet paper, isn't it?
It's
just a piece of paper.
And we see the US founded on these ideas turning into the most tyrannical thing that's ever existed on the earth, far more destructive than anything that's gone before. Mm. And so, yes, the question is, peaceful revolution, can it happen? Is there another way? Because we do seem to be falling back into this belief that use of force, and this is where I kind of diverge from Alex Jones.
But it's not a way, Harold. Like, it's a situation that might, it's not something that the people are going to bring on. You know, I mean, I know he talks about if they take the guns, then there'll be a civil war, a revolution or whatever. Maybe there could be between certain states, or there could be states introducing legislation that allow a different situation, and that's being talked about at the moment as well. But the idea of the structure of America breaking down due to its, you know, its debts, which are absolutely, can never be paid. They're just so massive, they can never be repaid. Now, the student debt's going through the roof. That's the next bubble that's going to burst. There's all these other things going on. It's a situation that's going to create it, not the people. They're not going to say, right, we're going to have a civil war today because we've had enough of this police state. That's not going to happen. And what's going to happen is that their services, and they're going to be hungry, and they're going to be, you know, to the point where there's no other option. That's when people have a civil war. They don't have a civil war just any old day for any old reason, you know, because they don't like the government. I mean, some places in the world, they're, they're pretty quick to take up arms. But I think Josh made the point very clearly. The American people aren't going to be quick to take on a very, very powerful force in the federal American government. But we know that the American government's brought forces back into America. They've changed rescinded parts of their law that prevent American military forces being used against American people. That can happen now. Obviously, we know that Obama has made more executive orders, over 200 or something since he's been in power. He could just decree tomorrow that the guns are banned and he could just round them up, He could decide to do that. I don't think he will because there'd be a lot of bloodshed. Yeah. So it's the situation that's going to bring this on. And the right to bear arms, really in the Constitution, the way I read it, is all about the right to defend yourself from throw off the shackles of government, tyrannical government, and to defend your life and property and your family, and because of the way America is and the amount of guns that are there, and there's a whole lot of reasons that I just don't think it's right to take them off law-abiding citizens that do register.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's the problem, isn't it, Josh? Like, it doesn't. If we take these military-style weapons off people, it's going to be only the criminals and the government that have them. And some people would argue that the government's more criminal than the criminals. They're more organized. Oh, absolutely. That's for sure.
Absolutely. All you're going to create is a black marker. I mean, there's already at the end of the day, it's really starting to get to a point where we can almost print a gun at home using a 3D printer. Maybe not a semi-automatic yet, but the fact is that people will be able to get these weapons. And if not that, then you buy them with Bitcoin anonymously using black markets on Tor networks. The fact is that guns will be available to the criminals, and really, I mean, I know this is like the call of the NRA. This is what they've always said, and I don't want to sound like I'm some sort of parrot here, but the fact of the matter is, if I was living in a country that was really armed to the teeth, I would definitely have an arsenal, like John said at the start of the show, to protect my family. And so I was in an argument the other day about someone who was saying, "Oh, we've got to take the guns. Look at the Sandy Hook." Blah, blah, blah. And I was saying, "Look, really, if you were the principal, don't you think they'd want a gun?" "No, blah." And he was really going off. I said, "Look." And I really put it onto them, and this is a good way that I found. I put it onto them: if you were the principal, would you want to bare hands take on this guy while he was filling up a new clip, or would you like to just grab a semi-automatic off the wall and take him out? And of course, the whole argument just stopped because everyone knows what one would actually want.
if he's well prepared, he's got clips back to back taped, and it's just click, spin, click. There's not time. From what I've looked into, it looks like he probably shot them with pistols anyway, which is a much more useful weapon. A Glock holds like 18 rounds, and one in the spout that's 19 rounds. It's nearly as much as a semi-auto, but much easier to wield around in a classroom if you're some psychopath. And in the end of the day, I agree with everyone that says when you really look at the issue, sanely from the perspective we're looking at it, look how many guns are there, look at all this, look at all the history, blah blah blah. It's an issue more about medication. And, even though, James has been – I didn't like the way he performed on that show. I thought it just gave the left more arguments, right? It made him look exactly like they thought he was. But in a way, that's what he is, so it doesn't matter. But anyway, yeah. At the end of the day, we've got, 1 in 4 Americans that are on antidepressants or something? 1 in 6 is – it's some massive amount. I think it's about 1 in 20 in Australia. These drugs, from personal family experience, I saw my brother's suicide coming off this stuff. It's dangerous, very dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. We're just going to break. I want to get into the other question here that I actually think is really important is US dominance. Will US dominance diminish? And what will Australia's position be if and when that happens? You're with Truth News Radio. We'll be right back.
Hey.
Back, you're with Truth News Radio. It's a great honor to be talking to you today, and really interesting to get into a subject that's so fraught, it's so difficult, but so important, as this issue about defense, self-defense, the rights of the individual, the sort of the concept of the nanny state, the big arm of the law of the nanny state coming in to make everyone safe. Which I just instinctively know is rubbish. It's philosophically, it's wrong. I know it's wrong in my heart. That's one of the things I'm pretty clear about. But we are living in an age where there is this almost religious belief in the ability of the nanny state to solve problems by legislation. But
U.S. domination, Harrowood.
Well, look, this I believe is the subtext to all this, because whether it, as you say, is the economic collapse, or whether the civil war and the economic collapse are intertwined, and whether in fact the civil war will be triggered by the government in a state of economic collapse where people can't get their money out of the ATMs, and the government then says, "Well, we're going to take your guns from you," right? In a situation where that happens, then you will have civil war. And that could be the final straw when the government tries to come and take the guns. That's when it happens.
But that's why they want to do it first, before the bread and circuses dry out.
Indeed. And then, you know, every great civilization has collapsed from within. They don't tend to collapse from direct attack, except you might look at World War II and say, well, the Nazis were. But World War II was actually rather a unique special situation compared to most great civilizations. They, from, you know, the research that archaeologists have done going back many thousands of years, it seems like the great civilizations tended to collapse from internal decay or internal conflict. It's not very clear in some cases.
Yeah.
But it is inevitable. Every great civilization has collapsed, and you could call the US empire a great civilization. Now, what I want to ask firstly is, do we think this is imminent? I mean, do we think the US is going to collapse? What's your take on it, guys?
Well, I think it's going to happen for sure. I just don't know when, you know. And
yeah.
It's a matter of obviously currency manipulation, and you know, and that's what, as long as America remains in the hand with the hands of the reserve currency, and they can print it off their presses, then they're going to be in power. And as long as people are prepared to wear their debt and to buy their bonds, then
yeah,
they'll remain in power, because they've got, you know, 11, 12 aircraft carriers. You know, they've got 50% of the world's military total. You know, they're just such a strong, and their technology's, you know, ahead of everyone else. Obviously, China's catching up, but China's in the isolation stage like America was in the 1800s and the early 1900s, where they weren't interested in what anyone else was doing. They were interested in the industry and building, you know, the infrastructure of a great country, and that's when they were in their heyday.
Yeah.
You know, when they moved to a service-based economy that was all around money and their dominance of the world and a military force, then it's just the story of Rome. It's just the same story again, you know. So they're going to fall. It's just a matter of time. Australia needs to prepare for that. Obviously, we need to be on good terms with China and Indonesia, which are the two biggest groups next to us. And we need to be able to defend ourselves. Now, with an extremely low population compared to world standards, the only way forward for Australia, I believe, and that's a pretty radical point of view for someone from the left to take, but, you know, in my view, we should have strategic nuclear weapons, and that's the way that we need to defend ourselves. We need a population that is trained. You know, younger men do 18 months service if they're prepared to. You know, obviously there should be reasons that they can get out of that. And, you know, we need to have a Swiss model where every young man learns how to use a military-style weapon and they're kept in community armories, and that's what I'd do. You know, I'd take the Swiss model and I'd have strategic nuclear weapons. Israel's getting around the world with nuclear submarines with hundreds of them, you know. So yeah. I just can't see how we can be safe with America falling without going that way.
Incredible. Josh, your comments?
Yeah, it's for, I mean, you know, Mr. Pacifist here.
But you're a very assertive guy. You're an independent-minded, strong-willed guy. You're not a passive person. I know.
Yeah, he's 6 foot eight. That's the problem.
yeah. People just run when I see. No, look, John is very correct. I mean, you really, if you look at history, no country with another nuke has been attacked. But I think at the end of the day, my philosophy is so far from it that I just, the whole statist paradigm of protecting a state, I understand protecting property and your property, your own property or your neighbor's property to help. It breaks down to that, I guess.
Do you think US power is headed? I mean, what do you think, what's the future? I mean, does it look like US power is going to collapse?
They're going to hyperinflation like Europe. But,
yeah.
You know, the fact is that hyperinflation, all that...
Gets them out of debt.
It gets them out of debt. And the problem there is then it's on the way to hyperinflation where China or other countries will stop buying the bonds because, well, they're worth nothing in the next day after they buy them. So it's to the point where I think just an alternative currency will come up. I don't know if there's – yeah, look, it's just there's too many variables. What I do know is that the American dollar is going to collapse, and whether that is a catalyst for along with a few other parts in this cake of doom that the people getting their guns taken away and get right up. Get really riled up about that, as well as with hyperinflation or some sort of inflationary pressure. You know, it's there definitely is something going to happen, and whether it's a trickle or a boom, we don't know. I mean, if we look at Russia, it was a boom. It was very fast to collapse.
Yeah, when we saw Soviet power collapse, we saw that vacuum really fill up quickly with the US power, didn't it? I mean, we saw, you know, the balance there was some people said it was good. You know, there was that balance of power, mutual assured destruction between the Soviets and the US for, you know, 40 years or so after the Second World War. Then we had the Soviet Union just collapse, and then we had the Americans just embark on a whole new quantum leap in militarism and extending their power. And that seems to be what happens when you have a collapse of a superpower. So if America starts to even just collapse a little bit, I think someone will jump in there. I think when you've got Russia and China, right, potential candidates there. But of course, you've got India as well. Don't forget about India. And don't forget about Europe. Don't forget about France and the EU. France, by the way, has just invaded Mali. Are you guys up to speed with that? France has invaded Mali.
Mm. Yeah, and we've got, you know, the UK is pushing for the Falklands again, and, you know, there's all sorts of, well, there's the argument with Argentina and the British have the Falklands. I mean, there's all sorts of struggles that are about to kick off, you know, in the Middle East, obviously Iran being the biggest one, and the rest of the world with the struggles you've mentioned. Africa's, you know, could explode into a whole lot of different theatres of war anytime soon, you know, like it's just, it's all on the brink. But to get back to the American collapse, I don't think anyone is going to get in a tussle with America. They just have too much air power. They have too much naval power, nuclear power. They're just ahead of the game because they still control most of the major military technical companies. So no one's going to go into a struggle with them. What they're going to do is, you know, they're going to wait till they collapse internally, like you were saying, you know.
Yeah.
There'll be some sort of, you know, complete breakdown of society in America, and that'll lead to a point where the government has to focus its forces on maintaining the police state. And when that happens, there's going to be a big void in the world, and that's when people will move into it.
And
as long as America's got those aircraft carriers, which cost hundreds of millions of dollars a year just to run, they're about 200 million dollars to make one. Might be more than that. No, it's in the billions, I believe, to make an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
And then it's a couple of hundred million just to run one. Like the amount of money that's flowing out with the military industrial complex is, you know, it's between 1 and 2 trillion, depending on which figures you read. They just can't afford it. So there's going to come a day where they just have to, all that, just like the Russians did, everything just stops, you know. The ships just get ported and they just stay there and they don't move. And, you know, everyone gets the military start getting let off. They're not paid. There's no money. That's the sort of thing that's going to happen to America. And when that happens, that's when these other groups are going to step in. But they're not going to do it before. I can't see them doing it before.
Yeah. And of course, if it comes to the point where the US military is told to fire on the people, you know, that basically put them in a situation where they have to wage war against their own people, you get a point where you might get a general who'll say, I won't do that. I mean, there are a lot of patriots in America. The military has a lot of patriots.
That's when the Civil War that I imagine comes.
You'll get a general who'll say, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not following that order. And that's when you get a real civil war. You get a general saying no. And anyway, we're going to break. We've got one more segment after this. Please stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. We're discussing the prospect of civil war in the US. We're looking at whether that could occur. We're looking at whether US military power in the world will diminish and whether that actually occurs through civil war, whether it's economic collapse or a combination of the two. And of course, it's very important for countries like Australia because we are in the shadow of American power. We rely on American power to protect us 100%. And we're a very small population. We do have quite a powerful military for our size, but of course we don't have nuclear weapons, at least officially, as far as I know. And John thinks we should. I mean,
yeah, politically, we're effectively a state of America. Would you agree?
Yeah, certainly. What do you think, Josh?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, can we just visualize a scenario here where, I mean, I've been thinking about this a bit lately. You know, this situation develops in the US and, you know, we have the economic situation and maybe some run on the banks. And then, yes, they try to take the guns. And then you know, the military is turned out against the people. And then one renegade general says, I'm not doing it. You know, and I believe in the Constitution. Civil war. Okay, that's it, right? America then cannot engage in external conflict. Even they've got the power, they won't be able to. They're tied up internally, right? That mm-hmm. then suddenly opens the world. It's like a sudden opportunity is there for aggressive military empire building forces around the world to do things that they might have thought might be cool to do. And so let's look at Australia. We've got the population centered in the eastern seaboard. We've got a huge landmass, which of course has been traditionally the greatest thing to protect us because of that huge arid landmass.
That's true.
But what is, I mean, what sort of scenarios are likely to happen? I mean, earlier in the last hour, I was talking about Terra Nullius and the Chinese thinking, well, you know, not conquering. No, we just think that this could be used more effectively. And of course, Australia being tied to the American economy, if the American economy goes down the tubes, our economy is going to go down the tubes as well. And there could be all kinds of problems here that are similar to what you see in America with all of our multicultural groups, all with their ethnic conflicts. Terrorism could suddenly erupt just like it did in Syria, right? We could get a dose of our own medicine because we've been, you know, we kicked out the Syrian ambassador here and we said, oh, you know, it's just terrible what the government's doing there. Whereas the Syrian government said, well, actually, no, it's just foreign insurgents and we're trying to protect our people. Well, Australia could have a situation where we've got foreign insurgents here in the situation of a collapse in America. Interference from overseas, subversive elements start blowing things up, start killing people. Suddenly our government is in a bad situation. And they try to do something about it. Everything they do looks like they're cracking down. Everything they do looks like totalitarianism. And then you get the dose of the same medicine. You get a big power like China saying, well, this is terrible. This government is not taking care of its people and their economy is really bad and they're killing their own people. What are we going to do? Humanitarian intervention. I mean, you know, maybe what I'm saying is just a bit of ludicrous satire. But then again, it could happen, couldn't it?
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is, if someone wanted to take Australia, really, I mean, it's a piece of cake. With that. No one's armed. They're just, again, the Australians are more fat and lazy and television obsessed than Americans. They just want to go to the beach. And it's not such a comical thing because Australia is extremely mineral rich. And same with Africa. If you look what happened to the Africans, they've been under constant war, constant civil war because of the corruption and the minerals. And so, you know, it's all speculation, but in one way, I think we really the Americans do have something to say when they say we need weapons to protect ourselves against a foreign.
But it's really too little, too late for us now, isn't it? I mean, how are we going to get to the level of the Swiss? I mean, you know,
we'd have to have a policy around that. Now let's look at I studied when I was in the military for 10 years in the Australian Reserve. Yeah. I ended up as the intelligence sergeant, which is, you know, it's just another rank. It's not an officer or anything and not high level. I know people have accused me of being agents about it, but basically just looking at basic defence and propositions of possible enemy forces that might enter the country. That's really all I overlooked at. And we always worked on the Khmerian force, which was basically based on an Indonesian force invading certain areas of Australia.
Yeah,
Australia's not prepared for a complete invasion of the country. It's not really possible by China or Indonesia to do that at the moment. They'd have to decide on that policy and have to gear up for it. It's a massive landmass to control. If you want to control it as a sovereign, you know, if you want to take the sovereignty off Australia and become an imperial force and control the whole of Australian mainland, it's a massive. You're talking probably 1.5 million soldiers would be required.
Right,
like, it's a massive amount of people to unless it was done in some way where, you know, and this is probably more likely, where the government, we simply switch allegiances, you know, to the Chinese government, which was more likely to happen because why do they want to waste all that effort and energy when basically through diplomatic and economic means, they can take control of the country anyway. You know, why would they want to invade a country as big as Australia? You know, if they wanted to take strategic resources, they could simply control the state of South Australia or certain areas of Australia to control those resources. If that's what they were after during a Third World War scenario, we saw Hitler. Yeah. We've seen all the great, invaders in history, you know, they'll go for strategic oil reserves or you know, whatever they need to build their tanks.
It's much cheaper to lobby the government of South Australia.
Yeah, of course. Why would they invade Australia? Like, you know, we don't really think that's possible, but I'd much prefer it to have us on an even footing in our discussions. Look, I'm a nationalist, you know. I'm a libertarian socialist, but I'm also a nationalist. Now, whether that's right or wrong, and whether in the perfect world, you know, the one that Josh imagines where we're all sort of equal, and that's I wouldn't mind that world too, but it's not the way I see the world. The way I see the world is that we've got to defend our sovereignty because that's who we are, and we need to know who we are. If we don't know who we are, then we don't
see that world either.
You know?
I don't see that world either. I see it as a goal. I don't see
and one day hopefully we'll get there, but at the moment, it's definitely not the way things are. You know, so I don't think it's really a realistic scenario to imagine that sort of invasion. But what I do think is that the you know, the governments of the world, China, Indonesia, other possibly Russia, I don't really see that as a possibility in the next sort of 20, 30 years, but they're definitely there and they've got great technology. You know, that they might put a lot of political pressure on Australia, and they could do that because we can't defend ourselves, and they know that. And, you know, we've got a, even though we've got a good strategic force that's very well trained with pretty good weaponry, we're very, very small in numbers, tiny in numbers compared to other countries, you know. And we really don't have the reserve force. We don't have the fit, young population that knows how to fire a gun like we did in the First and the Second World War. We don't have that anymore. Like, you know, what we've been talking about, that's all gone. You know, so the only way we can really defend ourselves is through weapons that we can do a lot of damage with, and the only ones that I can imagine are nuclear ones. And that's the only way that we can really have our own power, and we can have our own voice, and we could be a real force for good inside the UN. At the moment, you know, the way that the Labor Party is worse than the Liberal Party, really, they see us as another state of America on all political matters outside of Australia, basically military matters. We side with America, and it's very, very dangerous, because if it does get to the point where there's some sort of exchange between, you know, China and America, then we're going to be on the wrong side. You know, and that's not where we want to be. So we need to, you know, we need to somehow withdraw from this sort of argument and this, you know, this empirical wars of America and the war on terror, all these idiotic ideas that are all about just spending money so that a few people in America can make money. We've got to get out of that. And the only way I can see to do it is become more nationalist and you know, and go and talk to our mates Russia and get some nuclear weapons or whoever it is we have to deal with, whether we do it on the quiet. Like, you know, Israel managed to get hundreds of them on the quiet. I don't see why we can't do that, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe the Greens are the problem.
I mean, look, I don't see much chance of anyone in the political spectrum has got any power doing that. But I would agree with you. It would be good.
You don't hear anyone ever mention it. I've never heard anyone have that point of view on any of these Q&A panels. No one's ever prepared to even talk about it.
No, because it's, again, the nanny state. We live in this myth of the nanny state. But the US is the new world order, let's just use that phrase for a second, is a giant nanny state of the world. And there is this belief people have, and I've had many discussions with people who believe that some sort of world government where everything is, you know, controlled by this kind of incredibly paternalistic ruling force is actually believed. Unfortunately, many people don't see the incredible sinister aspects of it, and they almost laugh at you when you try to bring it up. I've had people just laugh at me when I brought it up. So there is that problem of the psychological conditioning to believe in government, to believe in the beneficent power of government and the nanny state. But then, of course, there's these other deceptions, and when you're talking about how you don't think there is a danger of real invasion. But what we see now is we don't talk about invasions anymore. I think probably the invasion of Iraq was the last true invasion that we'll ever see from the US. Now it's all just peacekeeping. It's all about humanitarian intervention. They're never going to talk about invading anymore, but they can talk about the UN and giving the UN more powers, getting peacekeepers into countries. They could get peacekeepers into Australia if Australia became very unstable, and the Chinese might take the lead there, and they might say, we need a whole lot of peacekeepers. I'm just trying to just put a different spin on it so we can see how we might be deceived.
That's a real possibility here, I think,
yeah.
That's exactly the way that they do it. They do it by stealth.
Yeah.
You know, and then talking about the New World Order and eugenics, I mean, it's very difficult things to broach with the average person, especially, you know, the 200-odd million people that have been killed by governments, the greatest purveyor of violence, you know, and people just can't believe it, but that's the reality. We've never seen it here, so they don't know.
Yeah, we've never seen it, but boy, you know, once you start to see it.
The Aboriginals saw it.
Yeah, well, and they didn't really have a chance to respond.
They did quite well, and the problem was that sickness took them out, really, or we'd have a treaty today. But that's another story.
It's too hard,
discussion.
We're just at the end of the hour. It's been fantastic having you guys on. We'll do it again sometime. I love these group discussions.
Excellent. Thanks, everyone.
Mate.
Thanks.
Cheers, mate.
That's over and out from Truth News for another week. We'll be back next week. See you then.